RCT 88.3 FM. My name's Anthony Cacciato, and you're listening to The Angry Young Man. Well, good afternoon, everybody. It is Monday. Yippee. Or Friday, if you're tuning in the morning for our encore. Hope you're having a wonderful Monday afternoon or a Friday morning, depending on when you're tuning in. But before we get into the mix of things, just a quick reminder that everything that's said on the show today is strictly my own set of views and not those necessarily of WRCT. So for today, just gonna, you know, it's just me today. Just you know, my thoughts going out into the void today. So, just a couple things I wanted to talk about, because, you know, usually when we have guests on the show, we kind of go on topic specific conversations. You know, while they're kind of relevant to what's going on, they're not really like the news update sort of thing that happens when it's just me. So, a couple things I wanted to talk about today, because, I mean, very obviously, we're still in the midst of a government shutdown. Have you guys noticed? Because, quite frankly, I haven't noticed much. You know, whether or not that says much about, you know, how effective and, directly impactful the federal government is in your daily life, you know, it starts to beg some questions, and, you know, makes you think about why it's so important to worry about the local issues, because, you know, believe it or not, it's actually the local politics that matters more for your day-to-day life. And we're going to talk a little bit about local politics a little later on in the show today, because for those of you who don't know, there is an election this cycle, and there are races at the city level, as well as the municipal level if you're outside of Pittsburgh, as well as the county level. And we have some state-level races as well, judicial, you know, very, very important things going on in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. But before we, you know, get into that and we kind of zoom in, just kind of talking about, you know, what's going on with this the shutdown. You know, obviously, it's happening. For those of you who aren't aware of kind of what's been going on and why it started, there was kind of an impasse that was found, you know, while they were looking to pass the continuing resolution that would have funded the government for, I think it was like 7 months, maybe less. It was not a very long period of time, but the impasse came when it started kind of getting down to the Affordable Care Act subsidies that were kind of expanded under the Biden administration a couple of years back. Very obviously, Democrats wanted to keep them. I believe some were arguing for expanding them, and Republicans were against that. A lot to be said on that front as to how the Affordable Care Act has impacted the cost of health care. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. It's kind of made it a little bit more expensive. But that's a discussion for another day. The discussion that matters more here is, obviously, there was a disagreement, and that resulted in the government shutting down last week on Wednesday at midnight. So we're coming up on a week on Wednesday the 8th. Should be interesting to see whether or not that gets resolved before then. But, what exactly does a shutdown mean? When you think about it, if you're one of the individuals who is not keen on a large federal government which engages in large-scale deficit spending and slowly erodes the economic strength of this country until eventually the debt gets called on. Not a great thing. But right now, technically, the government isn't spending anything, except for a couple things that have been kind of pre-appropriated as mandatory spending. But that's besides the point. So if you're of the Milton Friedman-esque position that the size of government has to do with how much money it's spending, the government's very small right now. And that might be a cause for jubilant celebration. But there's, of course, the very notable downsides that, members of our armed forces aren't getting paid. A lot of our federal workers, if not all of them, are not getting paid. That's a bad thing. That is a bad thing. And I think that, for those of us that are kind of our immediate knee-jerk reaction is, oh, great, the government is for all intents and purposes, non-existent at the federal level, which for us who believe that the kind of new federalism that has evolved in the last century has been not the best thing for this country, this is pretty good. But then it's not good when you consider, some of those other factors at play. And that therein lies the problem with balancing out, what does this tell us for kind of the more limited government crowd? I think when I always look at this, and this is kind of the thought that I had, while I was in D.C. Earlier this year, and we were kind of juggling the idea of, oh, maybe the government will shut down. It didn't shut down, but it could have shut down. Kind of the thing in mind was, we talk a lot about, the essential employees. Essential employees, what do they do? Apparently they form, and are part of the essential function of the government. And then there's a kind of slew of non-essential employees. And these non-essential employees are the ones that get furloughed or kind of told, you can't work during a government shutdown. The kind of term non-essential employee is interesting to me. Because, you talk about, all right, we have this person, but it's not necessarily essential that they be here. Why are there non-essential employees? This is one thing in, the private sector that, you kind of balance out the idea of like, it's potentially more beneficial in terms of like the pros of having this person here and whatever productivity enhancement happens as a result, than the cons of, technically this is raising our overhead and, why do we have this person? And that's fine, if you're a private firm deciding to do that, your cost benefit is kind of riding on your individual profitability. But the concern is when you are funding your budget off of taxpayer money, is it really wise to have a kind of non-essential employees when you're technically supposed to be relatively frugal? Who knows? all this to say, while the government is shut down, there's kind of been this talk about Russell Vogt, who's the director of the Office of Management and Budget, who has basically said, we're going to use this to lay off the entire federal bureaucracy. Not the entire one, but kind of like in the order of magnitude of the millions. And, this kind of falls back on a concern that I've had the whole duration of the administration so far, and it's in that they're kind of like very rah-rah, like, we're going to reduce the size of the federal government. And like, up to that point, it's like, yeah, sure, great. That's what we ideally want. That's what conservatives have been kind of aiming for, or at least kind of saying that they want to see happen. Libertarians have always kind of pushed for that as well. And, you know, finally we get, you know, this kind of very vocal push, like, we're going to reduce the size of the federal government. And it's been very haphazard. And, you know, sure, you know, cuts do materially result in less spending. But it's the cuts that you make that are important, because it's kind of like, you know, going in blind with a scalpel to remove a tumor from someone's brain. You want to remove that tumor because that tumor is problematic. And if it keeps on growing, it might kill the person. But, you know, you want to be very surgical in how you do it. You're ideally not going in there with a pair of scissors, just kind of haphazardly cutting around the tumor, hoping that, you know, you get the tumor tissue out. And that's kind of what the approach has been so far. And that's a problem for a couple of reasons. One, because it materially is extremely problematic from a functional perspective. You know, you're kind of stopping essential potential functions from happening in kind of the pursuit of just reducing the size of government, when there are better ways to do it. And especially because there's better ways to do it, if you go about saying, you know, we're going to reduce the federal bureaucracy and then go about doing it this way, everyone who's skeptical of reduction to the federal government is going to say, all right, well, obviously this doesn't work, so we're not going to do this again going forward. And you've completely ruined and tainted the idea that we could ever potentially cut the size of the government. And that's really bad when you have, you know, things hanging over your head, like a, you know, impending fiscal crisis, which kind of always lingers in the background as we continue to, you know, deficit spend to degrees that are always good. Like, our debt grows magnitudes quicker than our actual GDP, which is where the problem is. I mean, like, you know, there's a case to be made about deficit spending. And, you know, sure, if you are responsible about it and keep your growth of debt under the growth of GDP, then excellent. You know, like, this happens, you know, there's leveraging of debt in the private sector too, and that works. But it's when you become irresponsible with that that it becomes a problem. And, you know, I would like to see us not Lehman Brothers the entire federal government and, you know, have to deal with a financial crisis that would be basically worse than combining the Great Depression, the Great Recession, and then maybe doubling it. Not ideal. So all this to say, you know, we need to be cognizant of these things as we're in the decision-making process. And, you know, very often the kind of government shutdown stuff has dealt with issues of spending. You know, the Affordable Care Act subsidies are a spending issue. Back when the government was shut down in 2013, that was over a spending issue. The problem is nothing's getting done. Even when a shutdown is leveraged, nothing is getting done. And sure, maybe firing part of the federal bureaucracy might help in reducing spending, but that's kind of a weird pocket rescission, kind of expanding of the power of the executive to make spending decisions that isn't exactly in line with what the framers of the Constitution would have wanted. Yeah, lots of problems with executive power and the growth of the unitary executive, which is a great segue into talking about what's been going on in terms of at least the rhetorical posturing of the president when it comes to, quote, lawless cities like Portland and Chicago, which the president has decided, at least, you know, in kind of speaking quite frankly and candidly in front of all of our military leadership, that we should use these cities as a training ground for our National Guard and for our armed forces. Not the best idea, especially considering the fact we already have training grounds and, you know, they serve well for us. But also, you know, the idea that, you know, maybe it's not the purpose of our national military to go into our cities and perform law enforcement action. You know, there's a case maybe to be made for the National Guard, but even then, you know, if the state's not requesting the National Guard and the federal government just imposes the National Guard upon them, is that, you know, we're you know, eroding federalism and also engaging in some questionable tactics. And, you know, it's, I don't know, you know, for those of you listening, you know, how much you've seen from the kind of law enforcement action on the part of those stationed in, like, Portland, for example, but very, very liberal use of mace and, you know, like, the kind of engagement with protesters that isn't necessarily consistent with trying to even-handedly enforce, you know, the bounds of reasonable protest. When, you know, these people, you know, definitely there are violent instances, and I'm not going to deny that, because that's, that always kind of becomes a problem, especially in Portland. But, you know, when someone's engaging in this sort of protest in a way that's, you know, well within their First Amendment bounds, there's very little reason to engage in the sort of very liberal use of force which has been engaged in these last couple of weeks, which is a problem, and it's concerning. And this is especially a problem when you look at, you know, how the military is being used as a law enforcement, a kind of arm of the administration at the moment, because it blurs a lot of lines. And, you know, an executive has kind of enforcement as one of its central role, but, you know, what falls under the purview of the executive is obviously a very gray area question. But I think if you look back to what the founders intended for the president, this kind of executive president, imperial presidency, that's evolved from the unitary executive theory, which has been, you know, in play since the Bush administration, the idea that the executive has broad sweeping powers to engage in, you know, whatever decision they want with agencies that exist under its jurisdiction. Basically, you know, hire and fire at will in whatever executive department, you know, the president controls, even if it was established by Congress and technically has oversight by Congress, because very notably, any department that exists under the executive is a delegated authority of the legislature to the president. And, you know, we can kind of go back and forth about how much of a problem it's been that that Congress has delegated so much authority to the president. But it's clear that, you know, Trump is setting a precedent for expansive use of that power. And, you know, I understand, you know, when I talk to, you know, other Republicans, you know, like, oh, yeah, you know, this is great. We're, you know, making sure that, you know, we keep law and order in the streets and, you know, pushing back on the radical left, you know, stuff like that. But, you know, I always challenge people, to, you know, that are of that opinion to think, you know, like, sure, this is fine and good when you're in power, but, you know, what happens in 2028 when maybe a Democrat wins, and maybe that Democrat is Gavin Newsom, and Gavin Newsom has no problem using the now new precedent of expansive executive power to go after you. Now, like, this is the constant struggle and tug of, you know, trying to balance out the usage of power and, you know, the goals that you have with the kind of ideological importance and restraint that's imposed by kind of the limited government philosophy of our country. You know, like, there's a reason that we have the guardrails that we do, because we've seen what expansive executive overreach looks like, and the founders didn't want any of that. But the problem is we've kind of allowed ourselves to continuously try to find more and more room under the Constitution to exert this sort of influence. And, you know, kind of Murray Rothbard talks a little bit about this, in that, you know, there's always a tendency on the part of the government to try to subvert its constitutional principles to engage in greater and greater overreach. And I think this is no clearer than, you know, what's happening right now. And I think, you know, at least for us on the right wing, we do really need to kind of pump the brakes on this as soon as possible, because that's the precedent that only gets set for us, but gets set for the Democrats. And, you know, that can be a problem. That can be a serious problem, because, you know, we've kind of agreed to the rules of the game. You know, the executive has X amount of power, and we're not going to ever overstep those clearly defined bounds that exist, you know, some of it in the Constitution, but other just in the national culture surrounding the idea that we don't want a powerful executive. That's why we have a legislature, to kind of place this very important check, and also, you know, a judiciary which keeps both other branches in check. And we've subverted that principle. That's scary. On a quick lighter note, just a couple things to keep you guys knowing about. Well, actually, this isn't a lighter note, but the lighter note is the things that you can do. Mainly, did you know that nearly 17 million Americans, kids in America, struggle with hunger? That's one out of five children who may not know where their next meal is coming from. At the same time, there are billions of pounds of surplus food in the United States that go to waste every year. With your help, the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks can help fill the fridges of children and families who need it most. Feeding America is a nationwide network of local banks, food banks, together sourcing and distributing more than 3 billion meals to people in need. Visit feedingamerica.org today to find your local food bank and learn how you can help solve child hunger. That's feedingamerica.org. Because together we can solve hunger. Together, we're Feeding America. This is a public service message brought to you by Feeding America and WRCT. Also, very quickly, just letting you know that WRCT is supported by Sidecar Bakery in North Oakland. Sidecar is an independent coffee shop with a full coffee bar, ready-made breakfast sandwiches, breakfast pastries, savory hand pies, cakes, and pies made in the bakery next door. Sidecar offers a place to study, eat, and hang with friends in a cafe setting. Open 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday and 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. on Sunday. For more information, visit their website at sidecar412.com. And if you're interested in underwriting for WRCT, you can email pr@wrct.org for more information about promotional exchanges and other partnership opportunities. Finally, a couple shows we have here on WRCT. It's From Here to Eternity. Everyone thinks they know the 80s hits, but on the other side of the Atlantic lies a treasure trove of synth-drenched sounds that filled the airwaves of Europe back in the day. Take a trip back to the 80s that you never knew with DJ Tony Tunes, From Here to Eternity, Tuesdays at 5 p.m. That's tomorrow for those of you listening on Monday. And actually also tomorrow for those of you listening on Friday, because there's an encore at Saturday at 10 p.m. Also, you can tune into Kaleidoscope, an eclectic hour of music with your very own DJ Kate, Thursdays at 5 p.m., only on WRCT Pittsburgh. Add to the colorful mix by calling in requests. And you could also call in here to the Angry Young Man after the show if you'd like to share any thoughts that you have about what you've heard today and hopefully contribute to some meaningful discussion going forwards. You can call the line 412-268-9728. Or 412-CMU-WRCT. Again, 412-268-9728 or 412-CMU-WRCT. On that note, shifting a little bit more to our local stuff going on, like I said, there is an election this cycle. Many important elections. But very importantly, there are some things to consider about what's going on. You know, also some races to watch. You know, at the county level, County Executive Sarah Namorado has presided over a 37% property tax increase, which has not only impacted property owners, but those who rent from property owners. The problem being, though, that there is an additional 40% tax increase that is on the table to fund the current policy objectives of the Namorado administration. And that's an issue, especially considering the fact cost of living has not been too kind to anybody, both in the city of Pittsburgh and in Allegheny County. You know, particularly housing is a big issue. You know, in the city, it's a big issue. And there's been efforts on the part of the Gainey administration to do something about it. Those efforts are problematic. I think, you know, if the pro-housing group is telling you that the inclusionary zoning is bunk, then it might be bunk. So that's, you know, there's a problem on that front. Obviously, you know, there's a issue with the increasing cost of housing throughout the county, and the property tax increases will do nothing to help that. At the same time, you know, it's not the most conducive county to do business in, or conducive to business, and, you know, a lot of jobs that could be here are not here, and a lot of people who could be taking those jobs or elsewhere, especially young people who, after college or high school, say, you know what, there's nothing for me here. And they leave. They go to Ohio, they go to the Carolinas, they go to New York. And that's a problem. And Allegheny County's been struggling with that problem for for many years now. And that's why it's so important to elect good representatives to the county council. And that's why it's so important to vote in those races. There's a couple races for county council that are on the table. There are district-based races, which, depending on where you live, you will be dealing with different sets of people running for those positions. But all of Allegheny County will be voting on the county council at-large minority seat, which is currently held by Mike Imbrasia. And Mike Imbrasia is being challenged by independent Alex Rose for that seat. Hopefully we can get them on the show at some point to talk a little bit about their respective plans if they are to fill out the rest of the term in that seat that was vacated by Sam DeMarco, who is currently now with the McCormick office. But, you know, this is part of whoever is elected to the county council will ultimately decide whether or not that property tax increase gets over the line and whether or not from 2023 property owners will have experienced nearly an 80% tax increase. And, you know, when cost of living is not great, that's a problem to really lean into, you know, these massive tax hikes. And that hurts young people, especially, too, you know, that are looking to post-college or post-high school settle down, find a job, live somewhere in Allegheny County. All this to say, it's, you know, sure, they're not as flashy as the national races or, you know, the gubernatorial race, but they impact you. Local government is what you see when you walk out the door. It's your infrastructure. It's your roads. It's your bridges. It's your buses. It's your, you know, it's your housing policy, you know, which is decided at the city level as well as the county level. It's your taxes. A lot of your taxes are county and municipal level. That factors a lot into, you know, very, very basic things like, you know, how do you get to work? Do you have work? You know, are the jobs there? And unfortunately, there's not a lot of people talking about what's going on that front. And that's a shame because this ultimately, you know, as I said earlier, I mean, sure, the federal government shut down right now, but I think you'd feel it a lot more if local government was at an impasse. And I think we're feeling it even more because the state government's at an impasse. I think the fact that a budget hasn't been passed yet in Harrisburg arguably affects people in Allegheny County and Pittsburgh a lot more than the federal shutdown does. And I, you know, that speaks so much to the importance of staying involved and engaged at this local level. So it's important to stay aware of these things. There's a lot of great nonpartisan sources to find out information. Read your local news. They hopefully are reporting on the important things. You know, groups like the League of Women Voters put out some great sources for finding out information there. Just, you know, staying involved, staying engaged. That's kind of the crux of our democracy. It's what, you know, ultimately delivers the things that people find important and, you know, deal with in their daily lives. So bring the same zeal, bring the same interest and engagement that you do when the president is up for election, that you do to when the mayor's up for election, or your county council person's up for election, or your city council person's up for election. These are important things, and you can't write them off. And, you know, my hope is that, you know, this serves as an opportunity to bring some necessary change to our local government and hopefully make Allegheny County a place where people can stick around. Because it's a tough world out there for young people. And, you know, the more I speak to, you know, people that I know in my classes at my school, this sits at the front of a lot of people's brains. You know, as seniors in college, this is the, you know, you're about to go out into the world. And especially around here, it's the opportunities are slim, and they're becoming slimmer. So we'll see. You know, there's a lot of potential for some good things. There's a lot more potential for some bad things. So stay engaged. that's kind of what I've got for you guys today. And you know what? I feel like I never give us the opportunity to enjoy the kind of backdrop for our show. For those of you who don't know what we're listening to right now, this is Stoneflower, great bossa nova album by Antonio Carlos Jobim, kind of the father of bossa nova. Makes our show very peaceful in the background. I think it serves some great lobby music function there. I guess I could also talk about the fact that our intro and that's by the great Billy Joel. I'm obliged to love that man as a Long Islander. It's a good song. You should give it's a great song. I don't know what I'm saying. Y'all should give that a listen at some point. I guess we'll sit on some Antonio Carlos Jobim on the way out in this last minute here. I'd like to thank you all for joining me today on a solo episode here, but next week we'll be running a rerun, be out of town, fall break for CMU, finally. I hope you all enjoy the rest of this wonderful day. Take care. God bless.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places?
Every year, over 1 million fires burn in America. Fortunately, firefighters are on the job, saving life and property, and you can be a part of it. 7 out of 10 firefighters and emergency responders are volunteers. There's no typical firefighter. Anyone can volunteer to serve their community. Volunteering as a first responder is really about having the heart and drive to make a difference where it's needed most. Your community needs you. Are you ready to answer the call? Learn more and find local volunteer opportunities at makemeafirefighter.org.
You are listening to 88.3 FM WRCT Pittsburgh and online at wrct.org.
Rise above, we're gonna rise. runners arrive with petition.
I have this philosophy. Is your life worth the pain in? Is this girl versus boy with different symbol? Being born is power. Scout leader, not detect this big sin. Your risk, change me hostage. Me, I'm fighting with my head. I'm not a big whiz.
I must look like a dork. So dig this big crux.
Organizing the Boy Scouts for murder is wrong. 10 years beyond a big sweat point. Man, it was still there ever without you. Coming back around, look, we're coming together for just a second. A peek, a guess. At the wholeness, it's way too big.
At the wholeness, it's way too big.
Immaculate protection. Played all the
easy living. You can't come close to the love that I've given to tell your mama and your papa. Sometimes good guys don't wear white.
This is WRCT Pittsburgh. My name is Aubriana. On our music calendar, we have Melvin Seals and JGB with Dave and Pappy from The Cause at the Thunderbird at 8 p.m. on Wednesday the 22nd. And then at Funhouse at Mr. Small's, we have the Toxhards at 8 p.m. and the Kyle So Washes, the Zells, Red Star Sky at Spirit Lodge at 8 p.m. and Los Straitjackets at the Thunderbird, also at 8 p.m. on the 23rd. And then on Friday the 24th, we have Sarah McQuaid at Music Night on Jupiter at 7 p.m. Now on the WRCT radio calendar, we have an event for you to hear about. Stop by the Pittsburgh Banjo Club's regular rehearsal every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Founded in 1988, the Pittsburgh Banjo Club is an all-volunteer band and organization that uses banjos, trumpets, tubas, and bass to perform popular music from the 1920s and 1930s. The Pittsburgh Banjo Club rehearses at the Allegheny Elks Lodge, number 339, 400 Cedar Avenue in the North Side. Food and refreshments are available. Reservations must be made by Tuesday at 5 p.m. for each Wednesday event. Call 412-321-1834 for reservations. If you or your organization would like an event included in the WRCT radio calendar, please send the details at least 2 weeks in advance to radio-calendar@wrct.org. Then from the CMU event calendar, the University Library introduces Here to Stay, celebrating 40 years at the Architecture Archives. This University Library's exhibition celebrates the 40th anniversary of the Architecture Archives, which was founded to create, conserve, and promote the rich history of Pittsburgh's buildings and tell part of the story of this dynamic city. All right, now on to Somewhere in Time.